Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on an absolutely packed Wednesday, our final show of the week, so we're moving everything up. This is The Herd, live in L.A. However you may be listening, wherever you may be listening, we have Blazing 5 today in 1 hour. We have Greg Cosell today. We have Joel Klatt today. We have Get Nick Wright yelling at me today. We have Bucky Brooks today. Again, the Blazing 5 today. We're moving everything up. Our final show of the week, and Joy Taylor is joining me as we get ready for not only eating tomorrow, but 4 days of amazing football, starting with the Cowboys-Bills. Tomorrow's a huge game to keep your eye on.
Jerry's everywhere today.
He is. So Jerry is still fuming. It's Wednesday. Jerry gets mad after games. He'll go down and he fumes a little. If they lose a road game, they should win, or they win, lose a home game, they should win. It is Wednesday and Jerry Jones is still fuming. Here he is this morning on the NFL Network.
No one in this country has earned the right to say, I'm a Jason Garrett man more than me. I am his man. The bottom line is we get graded. I'm in business. I don't have to win the Super Bowl in business every year. I can come in sixth and have a hell of a year. But in this business, you've got to come in first. You've got to come in first. And so fundamentally, you've asked for something that's a very narrow window to begin with.
He's still fuming, and he went on live TV today knowing he would be asked questions about Jason Garrett. So he wants the message out. This is one of these things, if as an owner, you would just say, I can't do this interview. You'd cancel, say, I've got big business. We have people cancel all the time on our show when they don't want a message out or they know we're going to ask a tough question. Jerry knew the question was coming, and he went on live TV to answer it and double and triple and quadruple down on it. They're looking for a new coach. I want you to think about this. Is it worse than we think? Just some context here. So when I say Philadelphia Eagles this year, you think of two things. Massive injuries, and Carson Wentz appears broken. Does everybody get that Philadelphia is one game back of Dallas? And Philadelphia hosts Dallas later. That Philadelphia's next three opponents, Miami, Washington, and the Giants, a mess. Dallas has 8-3 Buffalo, at Chicago in horrible weather, and then Sean McVay and the Rams. Folks, everything has gone wrong for Philadelphia this year. They started the year, they had cluster injuries in the secondary. I've never seen it. They didn't have enough cornerbacks on their roster. Then their offensive line loses their left tackle. Carson Wentz appears broken. Last Sunday, they were missing six offensive starters. And Philadelphia, over the next 3 weeks, is going to be heavily favored to win each game, and Dallas, very reasonably, could lose two. When you step back, it is worse than we think. Philadelphia should be done. Philadelphia in Baltimore's division would be done. In New England's division would be done. In San Francisco, Seattle's division would be done. In the Minnesota Packer division would be done. Philadelphia's got a quarterback that's broken, an offensive line and a secondary and a wide receiving core in major crisis all year. And they're a 10-point favorite, are the Eagles, to win this weekend. So there are those speculating. Remember, Dallas's quarterback has had a very good year. Carson Wentz is broken. Philadelphia's had massive physical crisis all year. Dallas, outside of Van Der Esch, mostly been healthy. So you start lining stuff up. There's a reason that Jerry, it's Wednesday. He goes on live TV. He didn't duck the interview. He wants the message out. There are those speculating if they lose to Buffalo tomorrow, they could fire Jason Garrett in season. I don't see that happening. I do think they beat Buffalo. But it is remarkable when you juxtapose the Eagles, who get Dallas at home before the end of the year in bad weather, and Dallas, this race should be over. This should not be close. One quarterback's broken, one's having his best year. One team's been decimated. One team's been mostly healthy. Very interesting in Dallas. All right, so every Thanksgiving, we eat a lot. We gorge tomorrow, right? My game plan with Thanksgiving's always been eat two small meals. I'll eat a light Thanksgiving dinner, and then I'll go back at about 9:30 after a nap, and I'll have another one. So I'll eat twice tomorrow. I'll go less is more on both. I tend to be a less is more person. I don't stay out that late. I don't party that hard. I like nice stuff, but I'm usually in bed early. I'm a less is more guy. I've been arguing this with TV executives forever. Less people on TV, fewer voices. Don't put 13 people on a set. It gets lost. You ever watch CNN during their election coverage? They have like 42 people. Just give me, you know, just give me a real strong person and an analyst and maybe a third, and then I'm out. And that's talk about the election. So last night, the playoff committee comes out. Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Clemson 3, Georgia 4, Alabama 5, Utah 6. My takeaway is, as I've been saying all year, the committee wants two SEC teams in. And they're going to get two SEC teams in. SEC teams are getting in, two of them. That's what they want. That's what they've been doing all year. Meaning if Alabama beats Auburn and looks ugly, they'll get in over Utah regardless of what the Utes do. But college football has always in my life, less has always worked for college football because college football is the one sport that has urgency. You have to watch the games. You can't lose two games. Everybody this year, here's all I hear. We got to go to an eight-team playoff. Eight teams is the solution. More. I want you to think about this. Yesterday, when they made this release of the playoff rankings, none of us even liked the number four team this year. Georgia at home got smoked by a bad South Carolina team. The number five team, Alabama, is using a backup quarterback. They've played one good team, they lost. Utah lost to USC, and USC was on their third string quarterback. If you start looking at the teams ranked just below Alabama 5 and Utah 6, Penn State 9-2. Could sneak in if we had an eight-team playoff. Really? Penn State's played two really good teams. They lost to both. Minnesota's 10-1. If we had an eight-team playoff and they beat Wisconsin, they could get in. Minnesota started the year out of conference by struggling against South Dakota State, Fresno State, and Georgia Southern. They beat Georgia Southern 35-32. Wisconsin beats Minnesota. They could get into an eight-team playoff. They lost to Illinois as a 25-point favorite. You all want eight teams. You all want more. College football has always been better with less. College football, even more so than we got 162 Major League Baseball games. We got 82 hockey games. We got 82 NBA games. NFL wants to add to their schedule and give us now, 17 or 18 games. College football's always been, you got to watch Saturday. You call your buddy, Clemson's down to Louisville. You all watch this game. If they lose this game, they're at... And you want to add more. Who would be in this year? A Minnesota team that struggled with Georgia Southern and lost to the best team they've played? I mean, what do you want? I look at college football this year, and I see three exceptional teams. Ohio State's the best football team I've seen. Clemson's the second best football team I've seen, although it is hard to get your arms around Clemson because the conference they play in is just so awful, but I think they're great because they have a great coach, a great quarterback, and great playmakers. And then the third best team I've seen is LSU, which has a regrettable defense. By SEC standards, a remarkably bad defense for a team that's going to win the SEC, but they're spectacular on offense, quarterback, running back, wide receivers. It's LSU, athletes everywhere. But we always want more. Ask yourself in an eight-team playoff this morning, who would be the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth teams? Really? People struggling? People losing to South Carolina at home? People losing the only two games they've played against good teams, Penn State? Just a thought.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I was assured, and you know, people think, and I've said this, I've always liked Russell Wilson more than the experts, and I've never liked Aaron Rodgers quite as much as the experts. So let's be fair going in. Aaron's a little condescending. I think he struggles in relationships with, I mean, I've seen his family call him out, sometimes on the sideline by himself. There's things about his leadership and arrogance, condescending, I don't like, but I think Aaron's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I don't think he's a bad guy. Russell Wilson comes in on a defensive team with a legendary coach. He's a little shorter. He runs too much. Third round pick. I think Russell Wilson's the most underrated player of my lifetime in the National Football League. And I'm dead serious when I say that. I think Russell Wilson over time is now better than Aaron Rodgers. I don't even doubt that for a second. And so I was told this year two things. Firing Mike McCarthy would solve everything. Okay. And I was also told, you got to give Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur time. Give them to Thanksgiving, as was kind of the refrain from everybody. Okay, that's fair. So Mike McCarthy's a bum, won a Super Bowl, but a bum. And that you give Matt LaFleur 8 weeks, 9 weeks, 10 weeks. Give him to Thanksgiving before you start judging. All right, so here's the numbers this year without Mike McCarthy. Completion percentage, Aaron Rodgers, 17th in the NFL. Passer rating, 12th. Touchdowns tied for 10th. That's with a star wide receiver, a star running back, and a very talented tight end. A running back better than Russell Wilson, a star receiver better than Russell's, and Russell doesn't throw much to the tight end. Okay. Colin, that's not fair. Let's start judging him last couple of weeks. Matt LaFleur was new. Okay, you're right. My bad. Let's go to the last 3 weeks. Aaron's 1-2 in 3 weeks, 2 touchdown passes, and an 82 passer rating. Whereas everybody works immediately with Russell Wilson. You want me to now give him 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 weeks to make all these young receivers work okay. Do you realize Aaron Rodgers this year, his completion percentage of passes over 10 yards is 45%. He didn't have one against San Francisco. Not one. Russell Wilson has the 31st rated pass blocking offensive line. Went into the teeth of San Francisco with less weapons and beat them. Aaron Rodgers off a bye. Game was over in 8 minutes. Aaron Rodgers, I keep hearing about his offensive line. Aaron Rodgers, under pressure this year, has a passer rating of 75. Russell Wilson, with a lower-rated offensive line, has a passer rating of 94. Russell wins more. Aaron Rodgers has a career losing record on the road. Russell Wilson is 16-4 in his last 20 in the Eastern time zone, in geographically isolated Seattle. Longer flight, longer trip. Russell Wilson wins more in a tougher division. He wins more close games in a tougher division. He wins on the road more in a tougher division. Everybody works instantly with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson doesn't need everything to be perfect. He's got a defensive coach who largely didn't acknowledge him for 3 years as part of the winning. It was Marshawn Lynch. It was the great defense. It was just recently Pete's really put his arms around him. So Mike McCarthy was going to solve everything, right? And let's give Matt LaFleur time. I watched Russell Wilson against San Francisco single-handedly with a gadget wide receiver, a rookie wide receiver, brand new Josh Gordon, a pass-blocking line that can't block, go to San Francisco and single-handedly keep Seattle afloat and win the game. Aaron Rodgers off a bye. Week 11, you know, blown out 8 minutes. That's all I'm saying. I don't think I'm a hater. I think Russell Wilson today is a better quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. And I don't even think it's close. I'm watching it week after week after week.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
One of the amazing things about the New England Patriots is that they've never, this is kind of a fascinating thing, they've been in 9 Super Bowls. They've never had a touchdown in the first quarter of any Super Bowl. Which is unbelievable. The best coach, the best preparation, the best game plans, the best quarterback. New England's never had a touchdown in the first quarter. They feel out teams. What New England does better than any team in my life, and I don't even think the people that hate New England could dispute this, they're the best adjustment team ever. They feel you out in many big games, all the Super Bowls. It's just a feeling out. going at half, and in that 13 minutes, they're able to fundamentally change the way they're playing. Josh McDaniels is the offensive coordinator, and he talked about those 13 minutes and the advantage of having a veteran quarterback and a 70-year-old offensive line coach and a running back coach that's been there forever, and Belichick's been there forever, and he's been there forever, how much they can get done in 13 minutes at half.
Into the tunnel, you usually walk with, you know, a couple of the guys on the field, and, you know, they have a few things that they want to make sure that we get across. Right when we get into the locker room, they sit, give us their attention. We discuss a couple things. Anything that may be an issue that's come up repeatedly in the first half that we need to address, we try to do that right away. Then anything that we need to adjust or anything we're going to change or put in at halftime, you discuss that. And then you want to try to make sure you let them know what we're going to try to start with in the third quarter as we go back out there. So it happens quick, but we have a veteran staff. The guys do a great job. The assistant coaches do a great job of making sure that all the things that they want me to be aware of, that they have them charted, listed, and ready to discuss and quickly jot them on the board and then give the message to the players and then go back out and play.
First half is a dress rehearsal. We prepare, watch it, 13 minutes. We change fundamentally how we play. Now, that sounds very simple. But again, 9 Super Bowls, no touchdowns in the first quarter. They always win the second half in Super Bowls. And again, you say, Colin, I mean, everybody does it their way. It is they do it. Stop blaming tripping. New England simply is better with the time they're given than your team is with the time you're given. Dallas made no adjustments at halftime in that 13 minutes. James Harrison, mostly with the Steelers, played with New England briefly. He said the overall attention to detail during, after games, before games is something he'd never even seen before.
What I saw there as far as their attention to detail, that is the most detailed organization as far as their X's and O's planning that I have ever seen. They meet about meeting. You know what I'm saying? I'm dead serious. When I first got there, obviously it was after Christmas, whatever, and I'm trying to learn the playbooks. I called my coach. I'm like, you know, I'm having some questions about this certain defense and what I'm supposed to do. And he's like, well, just come on in. We can go over it, look at it on the film, all this. I'm like, come where? He's like, come down to the facility. I'm like, you still at work? He's like, yeah, we're all here. This is 9:30, 10 o'clock at night.
They do a better job with their time than you do. Work harder, nobody cares. Another reference to Gucci Mane, who I now just call Gucci. Work harder, nobody cares. This is, you know, it goes back to the Tom versus time. And by the way, this is a season. So the Rams have had an offensive line crisis and a running back crisis. They're 6-5. Philadelphia's had a injury crisis, an offensive line crisis. They're 5-6. New England has had both, and they're 10-1. Their left tackle, they just got him back, Isaiah Wynn. Their center, Pro Bowler, out for the year. Kicker, out for the year, Pro Bowler. Fullback, one of two teams in the NFL that uses one, out for the year. Their first-round pick, now, last week, finally played. Last week, they missed Mohamed Sanu, Philip Dorsett, their 2 and 3 receivers, biggest game of the year, still won. They had Josh Gordon let him go, had AB let him go. They've had a 42-year-old quarterback. They've had an offensive line crisis, a wide receiver weapons crisis, and they're 10-1. Only loss at Baltimore. They just do a better job with time. I don't want to hear about the victimhood of your left tackles hurt in Philadelphia or Rams. We have a guard center guard issue. New England lost their Pro Bowl center, their fullback, which they use. Wide receiver crisis all year. Left tackle crisis. Kicking crisis. It's like, remember the documentary Tom versus Time? Like, I tell my kids all the time, no victimhood here. Like, just you get time in life. Sleep a little less. Sleep a little less. Work a little harder. Here's Tom versus Time, the documentary, Tom's off season.
I watch tape all day Monday, all day Tuesday. And then Saturday before the game, I watch film. And then Sunday morning, I watch film. I don't know why I can sit here and watch it and, you know, process information quickly, but I can. Running and lifting has been much harder to develop than this. This has kind of been in me. I mean, I could literally, like, just watch film all day.
I go back to, it's one of the craziest things about the Patriots. Best coach, best quarterback. No first quarter touchdowns in the Super Bowl. They get a field goal. That's about it. They just feel you out. They go in 13 minutes. They change the way they're playing. Then they go out play a Seattle. They go out play an Atlanta. They go out play. It's, you know, and it's funny about the Super Bowl. They could be 9-0. Like, their losses have all been on, you know, the tip ball, the last play, the David Kyrie catch. It's really remarkable. I just have a lot of respect. Do better with your time, NFL. And I don't want to hear about your offensive line crisis. New England had one. I don't want to hear about your weapons crisis. New England's had one all year. I don't want to hear about your kicking crisis, Chicago. They're on their third kicker. Be more prepared.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Jerry Jones was on this morning. He was on the NFL Network. He was talking about Jason Garrett. Jerry had stuff to say. He's still fuming. And he was talking about, you know, they've paid everybody, right? Like, they're paying Jalen Smith early. They paid Zeke early, 2 years early. They're going to pay Amari Cooper early. And they haven't paid Dak, even though Dak a couple of weeks ago was in the MVP conversation. And Jerry said, I'm not cheap here, but you are hearing increasingly the franchise tag stuff, meaning they'd pay Dak instead of a four-year contract, they would just pay him huge for 1 year. That's what Washington did for years and years with Kirk Cousins because they like Kirk, but they didn't want to get tied into a four-year contract with Kirk Cousins. And there's a lot of speculation Jerry's going to franchise tag him, which is, okay, I'll pay you $28 million. I'll pay you $30 million for a year, but I still want to kick the tires some. So Jerry was talking about, you know, the money, Dak, and all that stuff this morning.
Let me just say this. I think all of us, including the fans, want to win a damn football game. Okay, now I know we've got a lot of other things to think about. Who's coaching, who's playing, who's compared to another player someplace else. How about let's win some ball games, folks? We can take that other stuff. I'm not known as a guy who gets hand cramps when I'm writing checks.
That is, I love that quote. Here's the thing. Dak is 0-4 against opponents with winning records. And in those four games, he's completing 61% of his throws, 5 TDs, 6 picks, and a passer rating of 82. I have always struggled evaluating Dak. I didn't like him out of college. And I was, even his first year, 13-3, I'm like, I don't like what I see. Then I bought into him to his second year. I love his intangibles. Sometimes I don't love his tangibles. He is the trust fund kid of quarterbacks. He inherited a great O-line. He inherits Zeke. Then they get Amari. They've got so many weapons. It is tough. And so I think what Jerry's saying here is I'll pay, and I'll pay early, and I'm not cheap, but you got to win big games. And Dak this year is 0-4 against the best teams he's played, and he's not been good with all these great weapons. And that's why owners, I don't like the franchise tag for players, especially quarterbacks. You're trapped. A team can just keep you. But for owners, it does protect you because it is very hard to evaluate the quarterback position. It's the hardest thing to evaluate in sports. You can tell how many quarterbacks – Russell Wilson, did we ever think he would be this good? Even after his first year. Did anybody guess Kyler Murray? Lamar Jackson. So when you have a position that's incredibly difficult to evaluate and is incredibly important to a franchise, the owners are like, give us the option to franchise tag. We'll pay him. But we just don't want to get tied in for 4 years. And I think Dallas, a team that drafts very well, this scouting department is excellent. I think it's better than New England's in terms of college scouting. They're struggling with the same thing I am, you are with Dak. Is it the line? Is it Dak? Is it Zeke? Is it Dak? Is it Amari? And by the way, I think even the coaching staff in Dallas is having problems with identifying what they are. And the coaching staff watches film all the time. Is it Zeke's team? Is it Dak's team? It seems like they lose confidence in Dak when they shouldn't, and then have confidence in him in New England when it should be Zeke. So this is why you create the franchise tag, which is getting more steam with Dak. It's hard. If you make a mistake at quarterback, you're buried. You know, Goff and the Rams right now, are they toast for 4 years? I don't think so, but Penny, people are speculating that. And it protects the owners. It protects the coaches. It's not that you're not paying the kid. You're just not giving him $150 million. You're giving him $28 for 1 year. So, interesting thoughts by Jerry. Win some damn games.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you like.
We usually have him on Thursdays, but we don't have a Thursday show tomorrow. And I think if you bet football, if you're a fantasy football fan or just love football and want kind of a meat sandwich, the little bits and pieces of film study of Greg Cosell, 40 years at NFL Films, somebody I rely on for the draft, I rely on for a lot of my insight, and Greg Cosell is joining us. Greg, how are you pre-Thanksgiving? How are you?
Colin, I'm doing great. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Thank you very much. So we watched Dallas and New England. One of my questions with Dallas all year has been, what is their offensive identity? When you watch film, what do you think they think their offensive identity is?
I think they're struggling right now as to determining whether their offense still runs through Ezekiel Elliott or whether they believe that they can transition into a little bit more of a passing team, given the fact that their three receivers are among the top two, three receiving trios in the NFL.
Yeah.
The other issue I think they're struggling with that plays into this is the fact that for the most part over the last 3-4 weeks, they've not run the ball as efficiently as they had earlier in the season.
Yeah.
So I think they're struggling with exactly what their identity is. They had a really difficult time with New England. When you play New England, Colin, you have to be able to defeat man coverage. You can do that with scheme, or you can do that by finding your best individual matchups. They really couldn't do either. And Prescott had a bad game. In a game like that, you don't get a lot of throws. And when you do get those throws, you have to make them, and he missed them. And therefore, they really struggle to move the football.
Now, they'll play Buffalo. We know that I've said this. The Bills play defense. I like their staff. Do they have a low ceiling with Josh Allen? But I go back to his last six games, 11 TDs, one pick. He was wild and erratic in college. He's certainly not as erratic is he was in college. I imagine the tape's pretty complimentary to Josh Allen?
Yes and no. I think that Allen still at times is scattershot and can be very erratic with his ball placement. He had an interception this week in which that was the case. He's less prone to be reckless and make those undisciplined plays that we used to see. But we don't know how he'll be in a tough game like this on the road. Obviously, the toughest game he's had this year theoretically was against New England, and the erratic element to his play and the interception showed up in that game. But the big thing that stood out from this past week, and it won't happen every week, but he had missed a ton of open deep balls this year, and that's been a problem with him, and he hit one this week. Now, you're not going to hit 4 or 5 of those a game, but you do get a couple of opportunities like that every week, and if he can hit those, that changes their offense. But he's still a little erratic, and he runs less, which is a good thing, but when he does run, he's very effective.
You know, I had watched Kyler Murray 2 times and Russell Wilson once give San Francisco's defense line a little pause. Aaron Rodgers off a bye. That game was over in 8 minutes. Aaron did not complete a pass over 10 yards.
Correct.
He is completing 45% of his throws this year over 10 yards. Now, again, collarbone surgeries, maybe it's Matt LaFleur. Obviously, the offensive line, I think we've discussed, isn't as good. But when you watch the San Francisco game, it was like one of those early Tyson fights. It's just over. What was it primarily that you saw on film?
Well, I think the 49ers did some things a little bit differently in this game. I thought they really featured disguise and late movement to get to their zone coverage concepts. And again, it's not a matter of fooling a quarterback. You know, you don't go into a game saying, hey, we're going to fool Aaron Rodgers, and that's the foundation of our game plan. But there's a couple of times in every game, depending on the down and distance, depending on the field position, where if you show one thing and then get to something else, you can, in a sense, fool the quarterback. That happened a couple of times in that game. Plus, I think their offense has not been consistent enough running the ball in recent weeks, even though I love their backs. And they have not used Jones in the pass game over the last 3-4 weeks the way they were earlier in the year. And I think that's something they have to reassess. Aaron Jones is a very good receiver.
Yes.
Who can be detached from the formation, and they've not been throwing him the football and using him that way over the last 3-4 games. And I think that has really hurt their offense.
Yeah, they don't match up terribly well against physical defensive fronts. Philadelphia gave them problems. So San Francisco gives them problems. You don't want to have an identity where people like can say, okay, this is what they don't do well. And it feels like with Green Bay, you attack them up front, they just don't – they fold a little bit. They don't feel like the same team. Is that fair?
Well, what a lot of teams are doing now, and it's not just the Niners or the Eagles, but a lot of teams, it's become part of the league, is they're lining up with fronts that almost dictate one-on-one blocking and pass protection across the board.
Yeah.
And if you have a weakness in your pass protection – and the Packers, to me – based on film study, are not quite as good up front as I think a lot of people think they are. I think then individual players can be exploited, and I think that that's come to bite them at times.
I've always felt, I want to talk about the Saints, because in the last couple of weeks, there's a little pause with the Saints, and they lose to Atlanta, but I've always felt it is tough playing the same teams over and over in your division. And if you play Matt Ryan enough, he's going to beat you occasionally. And if you play Cam enough, he's going to beat you. And so when I watch a Carolina give the Saints real trouble, I'm like, well, Ron Rivera knows Sean Payton about as well as anybody in the league. So I always look at divisional games a little differently. Sometimes, Arizona for years just gave the Legion of Doom Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll fits because they'd seen every trick in the book Pete Carroll had. So I still think the Saints are really good, as I have my doubts with Green Bay and Dallas. What's the film say on the Saints today?
Well, I think the Saints are very good for a number of reasons. I think they're really well schemed offensively, because the reality is they don't have a ton of weapons on the perimeter, although they do have dimensions. And I think that's an important point. Ted Ginn's not an 80 catch guy, but Ted Ginn can still run by people, and you see that every week. Even if he's not catching a 50 yard touchdown every week, that's a dimension that they do have. And even Smith, he can run a little bit too. Now, Cook has been coming on in the last number of weeks, and they've been using him much more, and he's one of those tight ends who can line up all over the formation, and he can cause matchup problems. He beat Eric Reed, the safety for the Panthers, this week a couple of times, and Reed's had a good year at safety. And they've got a very good run game. The numbers might not suggest it, but they can line up and run the ball, and they play a lot with six offensive linemen, and that's something not a lot of teams do. They had two big runs this week out of six O-line personnel.
I want to shift to the Rams Monday night. I want to talk Rams, then I'll talk Ravens. New England's had an offensive line crisis this year. They're 10-1. The Rams have an offensive line crisis. They're unwatchable. Is it Goff? I hear everybody now, Goff can't play. He's terrible. And I watched them against Mahomes a couple years ago on Monday night, and I'm like, looks like he can play to me. Primarily, if I said one or two things, this is why Goff and the Rams are a mess offensively, what would those two things be?
I would say two things. Number one, their offensive line has been a bit of a mess. And number two, their total inability to run the football with any kind of consistency. And that's made Goff, who to me is a good thrower but not necessarily a high-level talent, I think that's rendered him ineffective for the most part, because I think Goff is, for want of a better term, a system player who needs the pieces to work. I think when the run game's effective and the O-line is effective and they can do what they ideally want to do, which is expand defenses horizontally and stretch them vertically and throw to open spaces in the middle of the field, when they can do that, they're effective. But if they can't run the ball and their O-line struggles to protect, Goff's not a very good, muddied, noisy pocket thrower.
No, that's fair. Okay, so let's switch to Baltimore. It feels like the league is playing catch-up in the middle of a season. Like when they first introduced the Wildcat, and for about 6 weeks, nobody could quite figure it out. Baltimore, I mean, this again is, they're against good teams. Lamar's completing 73% of his throws. And that's against good defenses.
Right.
Now, maybe that's muted a little bit this weekend against San Francisco. But it does feel like Greg Roman's done it again. He did it with Kaepernick. There's some guessing going on here. Eric Weddle said this week, I couldn't tell who had the ball. Were you kind of blown away by Baltimore on Monday night?
Well, I think they're so well schemed, and right now teams are having a difficult time figuring out the scheme, and the explosiveness of Jackson as a movement player, I think, probably catches teams by surprise. You can watch that on tape, Colin, and my guess is when you see it in person, it's a whole nother animal.
Yeah.
I mean, he's as explosive an athlete as we've ever seen at the position, and the scheme presents very defined reads and very defined throws for Jackson, and he's making those throws.
Yes.
Now, he's dropping in a few really good ones as well, but you watch their tape and receivers are open. It's really schemed. It's a very difficult defense to defend. And hey, don't get me wrong, I'm not smart enough. I don't have the answer to this. So don't ask me, what should you do? I'm not that smart. But it's so beautifully schemed. I think it might take an off season for teams to get a much better feel to how to defend this.
Yeah, no, that generally we do in the NFL, but it does feel like the league's playing catch up. Their receivers are often wide open. So let's go. You know, it's funny. I've said this for years. I think Russell Wilson's one of the most underappreciated, not now, but was for years.
Not anymore.
Yeah, he's a great player. But I hear a lot of these, and I always lean on you with this, and I think it's important for our audience. You come to me in the offseason, a year before everybody else, you come to me and say, here's the receivers, backs, quarterbacks I looked at. And you do this well in advance of the football season. You'll do it in the summer when we talk. I hear Tua. And I see, Tua is Russell Wilson. And give me your thoughts on this, because I see some components of it, but he does get hurt and Russell never gets hit. Your thoughts on Tua?
Well, maybe you and I disagree on this, but I don't really see him as very much like Russell Wilson at all. I think that Tua, to me, and again, let's just watch the tape. And just so people understand,
okay,
this past off season, not counting what he's done up in this season, but last season, I watched 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I watched 6 games, all of Jerry Jeudy's past targets and all of Henry Ruggs' past targets. So obviously Tua was throwing the ball. So I probably watched 250 to 300 throws by Tua from his season before. I don't see him as Russell Wilson at all. In fact, if he were to become a great pro, I see him ending up being more like a Drew Brees. I think he's a rhythmic timing player. I think that's what his game is. Yes, he can move. And by the way, Brees could move in his youth a lot more than people can remember,
I'm sure.
But he's not Russell Wilson to me at all. I think that he's an executor of a well-schemed passing game with good timing, plus ball placement, can make a second reaction play at times, but he's a very programmed player to me. And I think that he would end up being much more like a Drew Brees than a Russell Wilson.
I like that. I like that a lot. That's interesting stuff. So I think we're done. 40 years.
Can you believe that? 40 years. I started when I was 5. Can you believe it?
That isn't a long time to work. I've lived in all 4 corners of the country. I've paid taxes in 9 states. 40 years. You can close your eyes and drive to work. You know the exits. You don't even have to watch when you drive to work. Greg,
it's funny you say that. Sometimes that happens. I get to my office and I'm thinking, like, how did I just get here? I wasn't even thinking about it.
Greg, have a great Thanksgiving.
You too, Colin. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What are teams most thankful for? Is it the star coach? Is it the star quarterback? We thought we'd play a game today, Joy. What are teams in the NFL, a little music, John, most thankful for this Thanksgiving?
All right, let's start with the Patriots. Are the Patriots more thankful for Tom Brady or Bill Belichick?
I think you'd have to deduct this year, Bill Belichick is what they're most thankful for. Third down defense is top in the league. Scoring defense is top in the league. Number one in takeaways, multiple special teams touchdowns. This has not been Tom's year. It's really been Belichick's genius and the ability to get the most out of a crisis situation, O-line, wide receiver. They're the most resourceful team in the league. That's Belichick.
Yeah. The Ravens, Lamar Jackson, or John Harbaugh?
I would say in this instance, Lamar Jackson. There are things John has done that deserve great credit as a coach. You can't teach 4-3-5 speed at quarterback. Some of the Lamar stuff is the kid's just as dynamic as anybody I've ever seen do this. And again, I have given a ton of credit to John Harbaugh, but I think John would say there are plays in that game Monday night he didn't coach. Lamar's doing some of this just because of his athleticism and his dynamic ability. He almost got sacked 3 different times in that game and made big plays out of it. They're most thankful for Lamar.
Are the Raiders more thankful for Derek Carr or John Gruden?
I'm wrong on this. I would say, and I like Derek Carr, I'd say John Gruden. John Gruden rolled the dice paying Trent Brown. Offensive line's better. He rolled the dice on trading Khalil Mack. They got Josh Jacobs, the running back. John took big swings, and he was right on all of his offensive big swings. Richie Incognito got heat. He's now the best guard in football. John Gruden, they're most thankful for.
The Cowboys, more thankful for Dak Prescott or Ezekiel Elliott?
I'll go with Dak here. I think it's Dak's team. I think they're struggling with their identity, and I think it's fair to criticize Dak. He's 0 for 4 in the biggest games, but he's having his best year. His intangibles are incredible. The issue with this team is their defense. It's not their offense. It is their defense. Until last week, that was my problem. Last week, the offense didn't play well in crappy weather. It happens in Foxborough.
The Saints, Drew Brees, or Sean Payton?
I think this is one of Sean Payton's great coaching years. He's getting the credit here. 5-0 with a backup. Teams unravel with backups. And it wasn't like their schedule was easy with Teddy Bridgewater. They had multiple playoff teams. One of them, if I recall, was Seattle in Seattle. They faced the Cowboys. So Sean Payton's what the Saints are most thankful for.
You love this team. The Cardinals, Kyler Murray, or Cliff Kingsbury?
Again, like Lamar, I'm going to go Kyler Murray. He's doing things you can't teach. This offensive line was terrible. Like, this was considered an absolutely awful offensive line. Have you noticed how they have responded playing in front of Kyler Murray? The offensive line has had a very good year for Arizona. He is completing 66% of his throws with 100 passer rating in his last 7 games. The kid is really special. You just don't watch their games.
The 10-1 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo or Kyle Shanahan?
I think it's Kyle Shanahan here because they're so good at so many things. This defensive backfield was atrocious a year ago. They've gotten better on the back end. They lost Quan Alexander, and their defense has been special. John Lynch deserves some credit, too, for his pickup of Quan Alexander, though he's gone for the year. They're number 2 in rushing, number 1 in sacks. This is beyond just the quarterback. Kyle Shanahan has changed the culture. They're a power-running team with a really good quarterback.
Finally, the Seahawks, are they more thankful for Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll?
Give the front office credit for getting Quadre Diggs, Jadeveon Clowney, and Josh Gordon. So Pete and John Snyder deserve credit for that. But Russell Wilson is now 16-4 in his last 20 Eastern Time Zone games. He's become the best road quarterback in the league. Russell Wilson is 24 passing touchdowns. That's tied for the lead. Look at his weapons. Doug Baldwin retired. Tell me how he's doing that. Career high passer rating, 112. Tell me how he's doing that. This is the 31st rated pass blocking offensive line, and he's going to be